Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is Dr. John Stamey, and I want to welcome everybody to Scary Cast Tuesday. Boy, we got a blockbuster show for you tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun. The first thing, as always, I like to introduce our co-hosts. So first of all, from somewhere up in Ewing, Virginia, somewhere up there, we've got the one and only Matt Delph. How are you doing tonight, Matt?
I'm doing great. Excited about tonight's show.
Well, good. We're glad to have you, and I'm going to give you credit. Thanks for bringing our guest to us tonight. We're glad you did, and thanks a lot. From Houston, yeah. Texas, who played hooky last night on Scary Cast Monday, but he's back now, Kyler Smith. How you doing tonight, Kyler? That's right. You're not going to get away with playing hooky without getting reported on the next day.
That's all right. I'm doing good.
I mean, let's face it. This is about like a middle school, but we enjoy it. We have a great time. Well, it's great. We got Matt and we got Kyler here. And tonight, from parts unknown, someplace in Alabama, I'll let him tell you if he wishes. We've got a parent. Here's what I'm going to call you, Trey. I'm going to call you a paranormal explorer because you study things that are not exactly Western medicine, and they're not I don't believe they're exactly Western thought. They're more like some of the things that I get involved in. So we've got, from Alabama, we've got Trey Hudson. And Trey, thank you very much for being here on Scary Cast tonight, Scary Cast Tuesday.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to the show this evening.
Well, good. And I hope I got the introduction right. You're, I guess as I bounce around with my friends that are surgeons, that are Western medicine trained, and a lot of them really do understand that Eastern medicine and intuitive medicine certainly has its place, and I like that. And from what Matt has told me, you guys are exploring some very interesting things that a lot of folks aren't exactly sure of. Now, my background, so that you know, is when I got my doctorate at North Carolina State, I spent 3 years as a research associate at the Ryan Institute of Parapsychology, working with Dr. Sally Rhinefeather and Dr. John Palmer, who was the editor of the Journal of Parapsychology. And buddy, I saw some of the most amazing things that shouldn't be, but they were. And I found out in short order that the paranormal is very real, and it's so interesting. It is one of the few things that really keeps my brain going and keeps me exploring and doing research. I got a hot topic right now, got a new book coming out probably December 1st, and it's right in this realm. So anyway, just wanted to let you know, and of course you know Matt, Kyler is a friend of ours. He loves the paranormal. So why don't you start out by telling us who you are and what do you do?
Well, one thing you will be happy to hear is I know you've heard of a gentleman by the name of Dr. William Roll.
Yeah.
The famous I studied under him at the University of West Georgia. So I likewise, you know, come from that world.
How long ago were you at University of West Georgia?
I graduated in 1987, and I'm lecturing. I've started lecturing there now with some of their professors have invited me to come in.
Okay, Christine, and I can't remember her last name. She was from University of Liverpool, and she was at the Ryan Research Institute for a number of years, and then I believe she's close to a full professor, or if she's not a full professor already, at West Georgia. Do you know her name?
Actually, I think I do. I think she actually runs their parapsychology lab.
Right. Well, she certainly would.
Yes, she is. And also, you'd be happy to hear that is, and Matt's got to experience some of this when he's been out with us. We take some of the best practices from the various fields, and we actually use some of the methodology and some of the experimental protocols of the SORAD experiment. We actually take that out into the field and apply that on a boots in the ground type of situation.
Well, that's great. I tell you what I'm going to do next week. I'm going to give her a call because I've got something I would love. I need somebody who's got access to people to do some research on, and I'll see if she would be interested. I believe it's right in the realm of what they do, and I'm sure she'll remember me because I was up there for 3 years. But that's great. And anyway, please go ahead. I'm sorry for jumping in, but that's a bad habit of mine.
That's quite all right. A little bit about me. I'm a child of the 70s. You know, I grew up, I was born in 1964, grew up in the 70s, and was exposed to such wonderful media like the legendary and wonderful In Search Of with the wonderful Leonard Nimoy. You know, I'd watch that show and was intrigued by it. That was also the highlight of a lot of the Bigfoot documentaries started coming out in the 1970s. So I just really was interested in this stuff from a very young age. I earned an Eagle Scout while I was still in high school. Went to the University of West Georgia. Like I said, I have a degree, a BA in humanistic and transpersonal psychology, studied under people like Mike Ahrens, William Roll, Chris Anstus, Don Rice, you know, a lot of those folks. And just was really, really, had one foot solidly in that world. And I was also commissioned as a Army officer in military intelligence. So at the U.S. Army Intelligence School, they taught me about how to analyze indicators and trends and to look for those little telltale clues of, you know, enemy movement and enemy actions. So I've got one foot in the experiential, you know, i.e. for my university background, and I've got one foot in the analytical, my military background. And unfortunately, life gets in the way of living like it so often does. So I've been with the U.S., worked for the U.S. government for 30-plus years as a security specialist, been to Afghanistan, done protection of classified material, chemical weapons security, just all kinds of, sundry items in my career. And I have finally had an opportunity to start getting back into it, to start investigating things. And I've always been a paranormal researcher. That's kind of, that's kind of my background. And I started discovering that haunted houses and things that go bump in the night is a very narrow optic to look at the world through. And we have discovered a unique, amazing, remarkable place somewhere in America's Southland that rivals the legendary Skinwalker Ranch, which has a myriad of paranormal phenomena, everything from shadow figures, disembodied voices, portals, UFOs, cryptids, all of this stuff going on at this geographical location. Now, a lot of people will hear that and say, you know, Trey, that's a really bold claim. But Matt's experienced some of this. He's been there with us. So we know it's not total boulder dash. So I founded the ASOG, the Anomalous Studies and Observation Group, and we try to take best practices from the various fields and apply them to studying what people are starting to call the study of high strangeness. There's actually a genre of researchers now that are kind of shunned by everybody because we look at the world through a very wide optic, and we look at just all kinds of high strangeness and try to figure out how, A, it fits into the overall bigger picture, and B, how these different phenomenologies are related. You know, are cryptids related to ghosts, or related to paranormal, or related to UFOs? And how does all this stuff fit together? So needless to say, I have a very full plate, but along with a very full plate, I've got a really big spoon. So I'm still going at it.
Well, that's great. And I wanted to make a comment about the term that you've got called high strangeness. That's one that I haven't heard. Now, just so that you know, I learn every day. And I am so grateful to learn new things. I really fault universities that are National Science Foundation captive. I was at one, and that's all they worried about was studying butterflies and studying things that, you know, it's great to study butterflies. That's what our dean studied. He had 14 papers in it. But, you know, that doesn't do us any good. I think those of us that are studying and doing research in what is called the paranormal now, in 100 years is going to be called science. And mm-hmm. and I know that I work on it every day, and it sounds like you work on it pretty much every day. And this is the real research. It's like people get down on Elon Musk just because he's got a lot of money. You know what? Elon Musk is a smart guy, and he's out there doing some crazy great things, and he needs to be recognized for that more than just being some dude that has a lot of money and is trying. You know, so, I mean, I think this is the real research, and I believe that Nikola Tesla knew this as well. I have a little phrase that I always use, and it said, you know, in 1900 or in 1920, I said it in 1920, you know, if someone would have looked at you and said, there's going to be a little device that's about the size of a 3x5 note card, and you're going to be able to talk in real time to China on it, they would have looked at you and said, that's either witchcraft or you're crazy. And as we know, that's a cell phone. It's real funny. Nikola Tesla said exactly the same thing. He didn't know what it was called. He didn't know it was a cell phone. But he was a real thinker, and he was a very forward-thinking guy. And that's what we need in research, because we, you and me and Matt and Kyler and the whole bunch of us that are involved in this, we're going to be the ones on the positive end of the research spectrum, and they're going to remember our names in 100 years and not the names of the dudes studying butterflies. And I'm sorry, that's kind of a nasty thing to say, but, you know, I've been through it, and I really congratulate the fact that you guys are using best practices. That is the single greatest thing that I've heard from folks into the paranormal, because I try all the time. I learned them at the Ryan Institute. By the way, it's Christine Moore Simmons. That's her name. And I looked her up while we were talking. She's a great lady.
Okay.
And we'll have to get back up with her. And it's so good to connect with her through someone on Scarycast Tuesday. So anyway, I'll shut up now. Tell us, because now you get to tell us some of your adventures, and then we're going to ask you questions in about 15 minutes in a round table format. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. As Shakespeare said, cry havoc, and let's let the dogs of war. So let's go.
Oh, this is great. All right, please don't quote Mary Shelley, but you can certainly quote Bram Stoker, okay? Sorry.
Okay.
That probably wasn't too funny, but we got Jaker Stoker, Bram Stoker's nephew, on Scarycast Monday on the 14th of November. So I just had to say that. I'll call him up. I think he's somewhere in Europe. I'm going to call him up, waste some of his money on his cell phone, and tell him my joke that nobody. And nobody got. Hopefully he'll laugh at it. Okay.
Okay. Some of the things that we've encountered, we can go all the way back to the beginning. Some of our very first research, when we discovered this area, you know, we were trying to develop our research and our investigative methodology. And as you know, your investigative and research techniques tend to morph and evolve to follow the phenomena. You know, you have to make sure you understand what you're looking for, and then when you discover something, sometimes you have to look at it, you know, with a little bit different perspective. So we started looking at it as, you know, as proverbial babes in the woods, literally, you know, in the woods. We didn't know how to go about researching it, so we decided we were going to start putting teams out in the middle of this meadow, this field, which was absolutely ripe for research. What really led us to it is this area has a very rich history of Native American folkloric incidents, you know, paranormal incidents, ghost incidents, shamanistic practices, things like that. Very rich history. It has a very rich history in the 1800s into the 20th century of, you know, folkloric ghost tales and things like that. If you look into some of the more modern stuff in the 20th century, like BFRO, it has a lot of Bigfoot encrypted sightings. It also has a lot of UFO and UAP sightings. So this area was one of those unique geo concentrations of what John Keel called high strangeness. You know, it was one of those places. And boy, howdy, you know, who wouldn't want to look at it? Who wouldn't want to look at it? So we started researching it. After a unique UFO encounter, and we decided to put teams out in the field. And one of the first things we encountered was missing time. We were having one of our research partners, and it's a gentleman named Bob that Matt knows, was moving out to the meadow to move across the top of a ridge line and see if he could drive anything down into the area where our observation teams were. And he encountered missing time. We initially chalked it off to him just being, you know, focused on his mission, his task at hand, and not really paying attention. But as he worked his way down off of the ridge and started working back towards one of our teams, they're watching him through their thermal, through their FLIR equipment, and they see his heat signature, you know, his man-shaped heat signature, turn into a ball of energy, a sphere, a hot orb, if you will. And this orb moved several hundred meters in a few seconds. We figured it out. It moved at about 23 to 25 miles per hour. Absolutely impossible for a human being to move that speed over this terrain. You just can't do it. And then he turned back into a man-shaped heat signature. And my team members got on the radio, and they said, "Bob, are you okay? Are you okay?" And he's like, "Yeah, I'm fine. Why are you asking?" And they said, "Come straight to us. Don't stop. Come straight to us. We need to talk to you." And the two gentlemen that observed this, both graduates from the Georgia Institute of Technology, one had a dual degree in physics and philosophy, another in management, solid individuals, you know, very well-grounded individuals. So Bob walked over to them and said, "Hey, what's up?" And they said, "We just saw you turn into this ball of energy, this orb of, you know, heat." And he says, "I have no idea what you're talking about. I just walked over here." And they're like, no, you had to affect you. You know, what happened?" He's like, "Nothing. I came down off of the ridge and I walked over here." So we started looking at that from a macro quantum perspective in the observer effect. You know, who was affected, the observer or the observed? You know, who had the anomalous experience? And to this day, we still drink spirits around the campfire and argue about that on, you know, who was right and who was wrong, who actually had the weird experience. I think maybe both. So later that evening, we had a humanoid figure watching our campsite from, you know, from the periphery of the forest. And the next day, our intrepid friend that turned into the ball of energy came over with his GPS, and he always runs a track line on his GPS. And he said, "Gentlemen, I want to show you this." And he pulled up his track line, and it was a series of straight lines, you know, perfectly straight line. Can't travel over this terrain in a straight line, and Matt can back me up on this. It's mountainous. You can't travel in a straight line.
Yes, very.
And the only way you could travel in a straight line that would register on GPS is if you were in the air overhead. So I think we got a pretty cool place. Wouldn't you all agree?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. This is great.
Yeah, so that was back in July of 2016. So this gives you an idea of how long we've been investigating this. In February of 17, we had probably the apex of my career in paranormal research. And it started off, we were doing the same thing. We were moving a team along the top of the ridge, except this time nobody goes out by themselves, lest you turn into a ball of energy and disappear. So we had a three-man team working our way across the ridge with the same observer teams down in the meadow. Team on top of the ridge observed several figures on their FLIR that did not correspond with the location of team members. We run a very tight operation. Many of us are former military, and we run it almost like a military operation. Everybody has radio communications. We know exactly where everybody is. Teams don't move from their assigned locations without permission. So we try to have a really clear picture of what the operational template looks like there in the, on the ground and in the field. Makes things a lot tighter and a lot more easier, a lot easier to control. So these figures that we saw on our FLIR, on our thermals, man-sized, I'm not going to say man-shaped, man-sized, about 2 meters tall, 1 meter wide, did not correspond with any known team members. Where it got weird is these heat signatures morphed into one heat signature, shrunk down to about a meter tall, back up to 2 meters, back down to 1 meter, back up to 2 meters, and then split into two heat signatures. So whatever this was,
what the
heck? Was morphing and changing. So that certainly got our interest that evening. So we dropped back down into the meadow and started moving towards back towards some of our teams we had set up in the field. And this is where it starts to get odd, as if it wasn't odd already. One of our observer teams comes over the radio and says, hey, we see a box or a cube on our thermal. We can't see it with the naked eye, but we can see it on our thermal. And it's about 10 meters by 6 meters by 6 meters. So you're thinking, you know, 18 foot by 18 foot by 30 feet, a big cube. Where it gets interesting is cubes and boxes are well recorded in other areas of high strangeness. Skinwalker Ranch, the Chupa Chupas in Brazil, many of these incidences recorded cube-like structures. So here we are. We have one of these cube-like structures in our area. And about the time that our team turned the record option onto their on their FLIR, because we don't run that all the time because it runs down the battery and eats up memory, it started dissipating. It's like, doggone it, you know, we didn't capture this on video. Oh, well, you know, at least we saw it, and, you know, we have affidavits that affect, et cetera. So we decided we were going to vector a team over to where this cube or this box was, where the remnants was. You could just barely see it on the FLIR. And beside it, there was a cruciform type figure, like a cross. So we vectored our team members over into the area where this cube or box was. And to our absolute astonishment, they completely disappeared off of our FLIR. They gave off no heat signature. And we have tried in vain to recreate that, to see if we can put somebody at that location in the exact same situation at the exact same time of year, and if they can totally obscure their heat signature. They can't. This was in February. There was no vegetation. It was all dead. Their heat signature was completely obscured. So for all accounts, they disappeared. They vanished. We do have that on video, which I think is the first. So about the time all this was going on, we noticed, once again, these strange heat signatures watching us from a small copse of trees about 40 meters away. Same thing, about 2 meters tall, about 1 meter wide, that did not correspond with any of our known team members. So, you know, this is starting to become a very interesting night. So what do you think the odds are that it gets even stranger? Well, unfortunately, in this location, the odds are pretty damn good. It's going to get weirder.
I'll put my money that it does.
It does, absolutely. And my base camp operator, Glenn, came over the radio and said, Trey, there's somebody here that wants to meet you. And I thought he was talking about himself. And I'm like, Glenn, we're going to come back. We're going to do a videoed taped after action review. And, I'll be right, be there when I get there and I'll talk to you. And he goes, no, there's somebody else that showed up. Okay.
Yeah,
we hiked
let
back
me make
to,
a note.
Let
me make a note. This area, for somebody just to show up randomly is pretty odd, especially that time of year.
Just doesn't happen, does it, Matt?
No, not normally. Okay.
No, I mean, it's in the middle of nowhere.
Yep.
And so we get there, and much to my chagrin, with an emphasis on the chagrin, is a woman standing there, a businesswoman, wearing loafers, slacks, a blouse and a blazer. 10:30 in the evening, in the middle of nowhere, in the wintertime. Something's not right. Something's wrong. This woman wanted to talk to the guy in charge, so she came over to me. And she kept trying to convince me to drop everything we were doing and follow her to this deserted county road. And she said at the end of this road where there was a structure, like a barn or a house, that had creatures called monkey bears. Now, I know what a gummy bear is, and I know what a teddy bear is, but I don't know what a monkey bear is. So that was a new one to me. So if you had a strange businesswoman show up in the middle of nowhere and want you to follow her down a deserted, spooky road to an abandoned barn and look for monkey bears, what would your answer be? Hell no. You know, so we absolutely were not going to follow this strange woman.
I don't know. I guess it depends on who you are.
Trey, let me ask you a question.
Yeah, sure.
What did she look like in terms of, was she exotic looking? Was she standard WASP American looking? What did her face look like?
And I know exactly where you're headed to this. And the story gets stranger and odder, and I think you'll appreciate where this story is going. She was very much WASPy, you know, very white Anglo-Saxon, very normal in appearance. She gave us a name, and she came up to me, and she's trying to dissuade us from doing our, you know, after-action report. She's, like, constantly, you know, just badgering us, you know, come with me. You know, what are you doing? You know, come with me. And she started trying to enter into a conversation with me. She says, where did you go to university? And I said, well, I went to the University of West Georgia. She goes, well, I did too. I'm like, okay. She goes, well, what's your degree? And I said, well, I have a BA in psychology. She goes, oh, I do too. I'm like, okay, yeah, right. Okay. So I'm thinking, okay. You know, she's just parroting me. She's, you know, echoing back what, you know, she thinks I want to hear. So I'm going to be smart. I'm going to be Mr. Clever Pants, and I'm going to catch her, right? So I said, okay, well, who are some of your favorite professors that you had there? And she started naming off people I knew. So here we go. We're in the middle of the woods, 10:30 at night, in the middle of nowhere, in the wintertime, with a businesswoman that went to the same university I went to, that has the same degree I have, and knows the same professors I do. Statistically, what are the odds? Pretty remote.
Okay.
Pretty remote.
Statistically, the odds are you have met a character out of John Keel's book, Visitors from Space, which is the Mothman Prophecies. You have met a woman.
Yes.
A woman, one of the black women. And am I correct?
You are absolutely correct. That is, she fits all of the hallmarks of what John Keel talks about interacting with the people of Point Pleasant, is people inappropriately dressed. And this appearing at odd times, trying to dissuade experiencers from relating their experiences. And there was something off about this woman. All of the team members remarked that something was off about her. Something wasn't right. To make things even stranger is during her conversation with us, she moved about 20 yards away from the camp, still within our lantern light, and she squats down and urinates in front of everybody. So you have a person inappropriately dressed, doesn't understand social cueing, i.e., hey, good night, have a safe trip. We're cueing her using nonverbal cueing that the conversation is over. She doesn't pick up on that. She doesn't understand social niceties, and she's just trying to dissuade us from our experience. A classic woman in black. But this is where it gets odd.
No, I'm sorry. It's already odd. Please continue.
No, it wasn't. But it gets, this puts a very interesting twist on the whole woman in black phenomenon, because she gave a name. We looked her up. Part of my background, I also used to do counterintelligence, so I've got a little bit of experience in data mining and stuff like that. So we did a little data mining on her. It appears to be a real person. There is a person that matches her name, that matched up with the profession she gave us, that looked like the person that was in our campsite. So what in the hell is, you know, what is that about? So turn the page. Several, about a year and a half later, I get a call from a gentleman in Istanbul, Turkey. So happens he's a psychotherapist, graduated from the University of West Georgia. And he heard me on one of the Coast to Coast or one of the radio shows, and he wanted to talk to me about a phenomenon known as the Carrollton Vortex, which is a weird place there in Carroll County, Georgia. And we were talking. He says, hey, would you mind giving me the name of that weird woman you talked about? And I said, yeah, her name is blank, blank. And he goes, holy cow, I think I know her. I said, okay. And he goes, hey, would you mind if I talk to her on your behalf? I said, not only would I encourage that, I would love to interview her. I'm not interested in outing her or embarrassing her, but this is just such a weird experience. I need to know what's going on. So she declined to be interviewed about me, which I get. I'm cool with that. And she said, told him that she remembers driving around the forest after a hard day at work, and she is in a profession that quite stressful, and she drove by our campsite and she saw like a Bigfoot sticker or something on somebody's car, and she thought, oh, I need to tell these people about my monkey bears. And so she came back that night, and from her recollection, and he asked her, he said, what is your recollection of that evening? And she says, well, I went there and I told them about my experiences as a child with these creatures, and they seemed like they had something else they wanted to do, and they were trying to hide something. And he said, do you remember anything strange or unusual about that or anything out of the ordinary? And she says, no, they just didn't seem too interested in talking to me, and I got in my automobile and left. So she doesn't recall the urinating and all of that stuff. So that puts kind of an interesting twist on the whole Men in Black phenomenon. Is it possible that these are actually real human beings that are being influenced by something else, and they are acting on the behalf of this other intelligence or this other sentient entity, whatever it is, and they are overlaid with a screen memory where they don't remember, you know, some of their more bizarre activities and actions.
All right, now I've got a question that has jumped out at me. When you said she squatted down and urinated, did she pull her – I mean, I'm sorry for asking. Did she pull her pants down?
Yes.
Oh, okay, good. So there was consciousness of the biology of herself.
Right.
Okay,
so,
that is –
you know, it's like what it reminded me of is – and, you know, when talking to my friend, the psychotherapist, who I'm in constant communications with, he said that even at the university, she was very much of an intuitive. He said, if something was going to take control of a person or influence a person, he goes, she would be the one. You know, she has that type of personality, that she would be, you know, would be a good receiver for that. And so, you know, that just puts another, you know, little column, you know, in the whole phenomena of men and women in black, you know, and, you know, maybe there's something else. You know, maybe they are actual human beings that are overlaid with screen memories that don't really remember their actions.
Well, did you ever get any bead or anything about her features?
No. I mean, her features were normal. Her features were
her creatures. The ones that she, the monkey bears.
Oh, the monkey bears. Oh, I'm sorry. The creatures. We did go down the road that she recommended we, you know, take a look at. And we could find no structure. You know, we found nothing that, you know, fit her description. Monkey bears could be a juvenile way of describing small Sasquatches. Now, like I said, there are a very, you know, rich, you know, history of cryptids in that area. So, you know, perhaps that she was referring to that in using a juvenile terminology. So, you know, that could make, you know, that would fit. But, you know, we were never able to find the area that she was talking about. When we got to the road, it was gated. We had to actually dismount and hike quite a ways. And, we never saw anything. Our review of aerial photography didn't show any structures or anything like that. So, who knows?
Yeah, I want to make another note of this area. In this area that we researched there, the cube shape, the portal, the area for a portal to open, you're supposed to have the zero magnetic field and high burst of energy. Now, in this area, Trey and myself was out there, and I was like, that way is north. And because I could tell just not using a compass, just because the sun rises in the east, sets in the west, so the northern hemisphere, moss usually from the waist up grows on the north side of a tree. So I could identify which way was north stuff. Trey pulls out his compass, who's using the magnetic field, of course, of the earth, and it's off. So it's got the perfect conditions, everything, this whole area, it's a high strange event area. It's scientifically, you can prove, hey, this is the stuff everybody's always, where's the science behind this? The science is there, just people don't want to look further into it. But, yeah, this area is excellent for that kind of weird stuff.
Matt, we're not talking about butterflies here, are we?
No, we're talking about
you can tell. I'm sorry. You can tell.
Energy
I
and magnetic field.
Yeah.
Got to go to the quantum side of it.
I'm predisposed to having a bad attitude towards some in National Science Foundation funded research guys. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Please go ahead.
No problem. No mariposa, por favor. No butterflies here. Absolutely. So Matt, touched on something about, electromagnetic fields, geomagnetic fields. And we started discovering small, tiny spikes of radiation. We carry Geiger counters with us. And I'm just going to jump ahead here because, Matt kind of broached the subject, is I talked about bringing best practices in from other fields. I have a big toolbox with a lot of tools in it. So we decided that we were going to use the Estes protocol in the meadow. And so I know y'all are familiar with the Estes protocol using the ghost.
No,
protocol.
I
explain that, especially to the audience. I'd explain it to the audience, Trey.
The Estes protocol is where you take a ghost box, like you've seen on TV. It takes little snippets of, AM or FM frequencies, and you pick out little snippets of words. And that's always been very, very subjective to the person hearing it. They hear what they want to hear. I got it. So what the Estes protocol is you take a ghost box, plug it into earbuds. You put earmuffs over those earbuds, so you're only hearing what comes out of that ghost box, and you blindfold the person that's the receiver, so they can only hear what's coming out of the ghost box. And their instructions are to only repeat what they hear and repeat whatever it is they discern, regardless of what the word is. So if they hear marzipan, they say marzipan. If they hear truck stop, they say truck stop. They have no idea what's being asked to them. They don't know who's asking the question. So we did that in the meadow. And we actually appears, and the transcript is in my book, to communicate with an entity that got very upset and very agitated when we started asking about different phenomenologies, electromagnetism, geomagnetic fluctuations, things like that. It started to get very upset and very agitated. What also was very weird is we started seeing radiation spikes when it was answering these questions. The background radiation at this area is about 0.06 microsieverts per hour. Whenever we would get an answer or an agitation, it would jump up to a 0.12 microsieverts per hour, 100% increase. Now, 0.12 microsievert per hour is not dangerous, but empirically, it's a significant rise above the background radiation. This area where this was happening is also an area where I had personally had extreme disorientation to the point that I did not know where I was. And if it wasn't for a team member getting me reoriented, I could have become very, very lost and possibly ended up as one of the chapters in one of Dave Pilates' Missing 411 books. Corresponding with that extreme disorientation was a radiation spike of 0.33 gloceverts per hour. So we're actually starting to capture empirical data when these events of high strangeness occur.
Now, was that Jessica that was with you?
Kristen was with me.
Okay, Kristen, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, and also we like track stuff like that. We will check to see, like, if we find a Bigfoot track or anything like that, we measure the radiation so that way it will tell us if it's come from some place of high energy, for example, portal, whatever. So we do a great job at receiving data on all this stuff. It's a great theme, actually.
You know, and we have you know, had other strange experiences, and I know we're getting close to the, you know, the round table firing squad for me, but back in June of 2020, we had gone out there during, you know, the COVID season, and we started having experiences of people's vehicles locking and unlocking, and Matt's actually been there when this has happened. And it's kind of funny because it's become a joke. You need to keep your keys in your pocket or in your tent because your vehicle is liable to lock itself. You know, it just happens out there. And we had one of our team members was up at an alternate base camp that we were using, and he heard a craft. Now, that's how I'm going to describe it, a craft, pass by our campsite on a chert road. And we all know that distinct sound of a vehicle moving across a chert road, that distinct crunching sound. But whatever moved past our campsite mimicking that sound had no lights. It was completely dark. Now, I'm telling you, when it's dark out here in this area, it's dark. And the only way a person could have driven a vehicle with no lights would be if they had the third generation night vision equipment, for some reason driving around in a wildlife refuge at night by themselves. But where it gets weird is at that moment, we had a radiation spike on our Geiger counter of 0.66 microsieverts per hour. So when this craft passed by our campsite, and once again it was Bob at the campsite, we had this high spike of radiation. That night, one of my team members received a, for lack of a better term, a download. He started dreaming about this word, Nox Magbe, N-O-X-M-A-G-B-E-E. Nox Magbe twice. And he asked me, what does that mean anything to you the next morning? And I said, no, but I'll look it up. Well, my research found out that the word Nox is a variation of the Greek word Nyx, which is the goddess of the night. So Nox is the Roman variation of the Greek word Nyx, which is the goddess of the evening or the goddess of the night. Magbe or Magba was a little bit more difficult. That's actually an old English word that you can find in the poem Beowulf. And Magba, kindred or children, right after the Romans left Britain, Britannia, Old English was spoken during the early part of the Dark Ages. People speaking Old English would still have some knowledge of the Roman gods and goddesses because the Romans had just left. So the two words are contemporaneous, which is very important. So you put the two words together, you got Nox Magba, which means children of the night goddess. Right before he received that those words in his mind, we had done something called the CE5 protocol, which has been kind of pioneered and researched a lot by Dr. Stephen Greer. And it's basically where you go into an area and you project intent, and many of my team members are trained remote viewers, trained in coordinate remote viewing in the Stanford Research Institute methodology, and you project intent. And after we were projecting intent for communication, he received this, you know, this download, these two words. So you put it together, children of the night goddess. What looks like, what comes into people's bedroom at night that are small like children and have big heads like children? Well, I'll give you a hint. One of them is on the cover of Whitley Strieber's book, Communion. Children of the Night Goddess.
Okay. This is Dr. John. I've got to make a comment about CE5. Do you know the name Spencer Fisher?
Name sounds familiar.
Spencer
Refresh
Fisher
my...
was number two MMA practitioner. I don't know what else you call him. He was the number two MMA guy in the world for a year and a half. And mm-hmm. when I did the keynote talk, I was actually with Mike Barra of Ancient Aliens up at the Space Expo in Spruce Pine, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. I had a major Mandela effect moment up there. Anyway, after I gave my talk, and Spencer and Mike Barra finished his talk, we both came, we were table buddies. You know, we had our book, I had my books, and he had his books. And Spencer and his wife came down to talk to me. We've been close friends ever since. And he is fairly adept at the CE5 protocol. And mm-hmm. we're going up there. I asked Kyler if he wanted to. November 19th, because we're having the Hadlock Comic Con, but he said he might not be able to do it because it's because it just doesn't work for him, I guess, because of Thanksgiving and everything. But I would like to talk with you about this because I've got a guy that knows what he's doing. He's very well known. He's a celebrity, and you know, if it's all right, we need to talk offline about this. Is that okay?
Sure. Please.
I mean, it's like, you know, what are you talking about? This is my buddy Spencer Fisher's territory. In fact, he's going to be on ScaryCast Mondays. I can't remember when, in about 2 weeks, I think.
That's
so
cool.
We will talk. We will talk, Trey, and we will commiserate together. So I'm sorry. I just had to bring that up. It's interesting when you mentioned CE5 and Stephen Greer. And here I've got my buddy just up there in Silva, North Carolina, and it's amazing. All right, please continue, sir.
Oh, so you know you basically you know the segue what you just said. You take a bunch of people that are trained remote viewers, which many of my team members are, and you do CE5. You know, odds of you getting you know something are pretty high. So you know that was. You know, that was one of the amazing weekends we had back in June 2020. We went back in July 2020, and this was very odd, is in the area where I experienced the extreme disorientation, we found a sapling in the creek, which is just adjacent to where this disorientation happened. It's probably about 20 to 25, 30 yards wide, with like little tiny islands in the middle of it, maybe, you know, 10, 20 square feet, you know, little tiny islands. And in the middle of one of these islands was a sapling. Sapling was about 12 feet tall, probably about an inch and a half in diameter, went straight up, and the top of the sapling was curved around like a perfect oval. I want you to imagine the oval on the top of an Egyptian ankh. That's what this oval was. What becomes very odd is you could not put a ladder and get to the top of that thing to tie this oval because you're on a little island in a stream. The little sapling wouldn't support a ladder, couldn't bend the sapling over because it would be break. And obviously not many people out there are 12 feet tall. but yet you had the top of this sapling formed in a perfect oval. Turn the page. You mentioned ancient aliens. They've done some research and some presentations on something called the Galactic Keyway, which is a very, very old symbol that looks like a keyhole or a keyway that is usually associated with places or concepts that involve a gateway, a doorway, or a point of transition between realities. This oval, this sapling, was in the area where I encountered the extreme disorientation, where I encountered the radiation spike, and it's only about 40 yards away from where we saw the cube or the portal where my team disappeared from the FLIR. And you can start getting into types, symbionics, and symbology, and it all starts to come together. There's something very unique about this place manifesting itself in many, many different ways.
All right, this is Dr. John. I've got a question, and we'll go for one quick round of questions, and then you can please continue talking because this is great. Up in North Georgia, where I go, I go a lot because that's where I have the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. We have some amazing tree structures that sound a little bit like that. I've seen them. I've got some pictures of them. And, you know, Bigfoot's 12 feet tall, easily.
Yep.
And what do you think the possibility that you're simply, when I say you're simply, that's not, you know, that's kind of like pushing the envelope. But you're simply talking about some Bigfoot structures and Bigfoot and some portals in and around the Bigfoots. I mean, do you think that's possible? That's what you're describing?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of cryptid researchers are starting to step back and take their head out of their very convenient Australopithecus or Gigantopithecus, rather, take their head out of their Gigantopithecus box and kind of look around and say, whoa, maybe there's more to Bigfoot. Maybe it's more than flesh and blood, because there's a ton of anecdotal evidence of that. Many, many cryptid researchers, Matt and I have seen portals when we're out, cutting for cryptids. Many researchers have seen, orbs, have seen orbs. Lights in the forest that are inexplicable, track lines that just start and stop, Bigfoot track lines. So there might be something more to these creatures. Science has shown us, this from your work up there in the, in the laboratory there, is human beings are multidimensional creatures. We coexist in other dimensions. We might not be aware of it. So if Bigfoot is an advanced hominid, it stands the reason that he also has these capabilities to bilocate.
Well, I hate to say this, but sure he does. I mean, that's like,
yeah.
I mean, I guess that's like common knowledge within my research group. Sure. It's like, everybody, I'm sorry. I just hear too many people speculating when we already know what's going on and nobody wants to listen, but that's okay. Me and Robin and Melba and the whole bunch, we just laugh and go on. I'm sorry for being so nasty about it. We just laugh at everybody and go on because we already know what's going on. Don't tell me Bigfoot exists in Myrtle Beach. I already known it. I had one that came and got an apple from me for about 3 months in a row. We know they're here, and I'm sorry. This is the cynic. This is the cynic and the bad guy, and this is the guy, me, that is mad at all these skeptics. And I'm going to take him to task one day, and I'll embarrass the fool, as we used to say in the mountains. I'll embarrass the fool out of him. But anyway, but I understand what you're saying. I mean, you're really and truly preaching to the choir here, because so many of me and my friends have got these experiences that are identical to this, to the experiences you have. Are you familiar with Jen Cruz, Tammy Trakel, and Jenna Grover, the She Squatchers?
Yes.
I mean, I've got a story in one of my books. It's amazing. And they talk about the green lights that they've seen in the mm-hmm. woods that correspond, they believe, to Bigfoot. Now, when you're talking about lights in the woods and things, have the colors been green and ivory? Because those are the – that's great. Green and ivory, those are the two colors that they see frequently. Are these colors
that you guys – we've seen green. We've seen, kind of yellowish white. We've also seen flashes in the forest. We've seen, and I believe Matt has experienced this, the mumbling, the samurai chatter off in the distance, you know, like Ron Moorhead talks about. We've experienced shadow figures. You know, Matt and I chased a shadow figure down in the troop herd corridor not too long ago. All of these phenomena. Oh, sorry, Matt, go on.
Oh, I was just saying, yeah, that was this past year.
Yeah.
With the shadow figure.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, this phenomenon is real, you know, and, you know, people that tend to poo-poo it and stick their head in the sand and pretend like it doesn't exist are, you know, looking at a three-dimensional or four-dimensional world through two-dimensional lenses, and they're missing a lot of what's going on around them.
Yeah. I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to send you a copy of the third edition of Look Up in the Sky. It's my book. I've got about 30 true paranormal stories. You got a lot of this kind of stuff in there. These are stories I've collected. Some of them are personal stories. And again, we need to get people to start funding our research. Because it sounds like to me you guys are going out there doing this on your nickel. Is that correct?
Oh, that is correct. We are self-funded.
Right, and I'm putting together Comic-Cons, and I'm writing books and hoping to sell 20 books at a Comic-Con, which is not going to do anything for me, but it's going to get my book out and my stories out to people. And that's very important. So then in 100 years,
yeah,
we'll be the guys that led the charge to all this.
Yeah, it's it's a thankless job sometimes, but it's the thrill of the hunt and the intrepid sense of discovery, you know, that I think keeps us going.
It really does. And now Kyler, since we broke into Trey's talk, and I started. Do you have a question for Trey? I'm sure you have a question for Trey.
Yeah, it came up actually a little bit ago while you guys were talking about the colors that you see. And I know that, at least from what I've heard, that, you know, we can only see so many colors with our naked eye. So do you guys have equipment or do you use something that can pick up colors that we can't actually see that you will pick up that you can't really explain to anybody else without seeing it on that screen?
Yeah, absolutely. Three pieces of equipment come to mind. One is full-spectrum cameras that actually convert the ultraviolet and infrared into visible spectrums that you can see. We actually had another cube, which was sighted near the end of a strange crop circle-like series of tracks that could only be seen on full-spectrum camera. We use thermal FLIR equipment, which converts heat into visible light so you can see it on your screen. Many things that we've seen can only be seen on thermal or FLIR. We can only pick up the heat when it's converted into the visible spectrum. And then, of course, the third thing is light amplification, Generation 3 military night vision equipment. Just a few weeks ago, Matt and I were once again back out in the troop herd corridor, and there was a very faint flickering orb that I could barely see with my naked eye, but when I used light amplification with a Gen 3 night scope, I could clearly see what this orb was doing. So, yeah, absolutely. We do use equipment to enhance our senses and, you know, make things a little bit more visible to us.
What's the most common one that you guys kind of rely on to just, well, I guess not most common one, but the one that kind of just makes you take a step back, like, oh my God, did you see that? Or is that just, sorry, go ahead.
Oh yeah. The portal. I mean, it was so mind blowing and so historical because as far as I know, it's the only video evidence, no shit video evidence, you know, with like, you know, 10 people, 10 professional people with affidavits that were there when it happened of people disappearing into a portal. So, you know, that was the thing that we still talk about. You know, that's still, you know, the apex of our research. So, you know, if nothing else, if that's all we ever end up getting and nothing else happens, I think it's still a success story. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. That would be crazy to see. I don't even know how I would live the rest of my life after seeing something like that.
Yeah,
certainly
absolutely.
Makes you want to go back for more.
Matt,
oh, absolutely,
Bill.
Yeah.
Now, Matt, I know you are Trey's research partner and everything, but join in, give him a question. We would love to hear it, okay?
I really don't have a question, I guess. I just he reminded me, I can't remember if it was we were at the – it might have been in our spring expedition that we had done, and you reminded me the downloads. That's when Kristen had that dream of that woman. And mm-hmm. Do you remember that woman's name that come to her? Because I had the same dream of that same woman that same night that during that night.
Oh gosh. No, I don't. Kind of the segue on that is I actually am in contact with a hypnotherapist that has offered to do some work with us pro bono. So maybe we can start peeling back some of these screen memories and getting into what's really going on. So that's one of my next projects is to get all that going. So no, I can't remember the name off the top of my head. We'll have to ask Kristen this weekend.
Yeah, I forgot because that just reminded me whenever we were talking about that because Kristen's like, I had this dream, this woman. I was like, no way. And I remember we were all debriefing there at the campfire and reminded me because I had the same thing happen to me. And I believe that's the same time when Kristen lost all the power in her vehicle and the GPS mm-hmm. was bringing me to base camp when I was trying to leave.
Yep. Yep, yep. And where that gets weird is person who's an experiencer driving down a deserted road, their vehicle loses all power. Where have we ever heard of that before? You know, that's a typical abduction experience, you know, Betty and Barney Hill kind of stuff. So, yeah, there's a lot more going on than I think we realize. So I'm hoping that hypnotic regression will ferret out some of these, some of these memories, and maybe give us a clearer picture of what we're experiencing.
This
I had
Dr.
a question
John,
earlier
I
that
think,
I just remembered.
I think,
John,
Kyle,
go ahead.
Let me just make a comment, and then I'm going to go right back to you. I want to champion you for when you say a typical abduction experience being Betty and Barney Hill, because not enough people would say that. I know Travis Walton. I've got him on speed dial. But mm-hmm. And I like Travis. Travis is okay. I've never met Betty and Barney Hill nor their kids or whatever. But I think they had probably the story of all time in the last century. I mean, mm-hmm. just I'm sorry. Do you agree with me? And then we'll go to Kyler's question.
Yeah, Betty and Barney Hill, Cash Lundrum. Event is, you know, another really good one because that actually had, you know, physiological effects plagued, I think, Miss Cash for quite a while, or maybe it was Miss Lundrum. I can't remember off the top of my head. So, yeah, it's the Betty and Barney Hill case was so pivotal because they had nothing to gain. You know, they were already social outcasts because they were a biracial couple in the 60s. You know, so they were already looked at strangely by society, you know, incorrectly and unfairly, but that's the way it was back then. So why would they conjure a story that would cause even more, you know, even more difficulties for them? And it was one of the first cases that I'm aware of where the hypnotherapy actually was able to ferret out and to draw out some of these repressed memories. So that's where we started seeing screen memories, you know, overlaid, you know, on top of experiencers. And I think, you know, if we're honest with ourselves, that goes on a whole lot more than people realize. And there's a lot more people that are experiencers that might not realize it.
Right. Thank you very much. All right, Kylo, back to you.
Trey, you were talking about one of your stories that you were walking around and then you lost track of where you were. I can't remember the phrasing that you used.
Oh, extreme disorientation.
Yes. Okay. So when that happens, can you kind of explain, you know, what you were going through that? Because I've never heard that before.
Yeah, exactly. What we were doing is it was a very, very abbreviated expedition, just a few of us, and my research partner, Kristen, and I decided we were going to go out, and we usually try to take baseline readings whenever we show up for a expedition. So we go out there with our Geiger counters and our tri-field meters and, you know, all of our goodies and establish baselines so we kind of know what the normal environment is, so we have something to measure against. And we decided we were going to cross this creek to the north of the meadow and see what was on the other side. Like I said earlier, I'm an Eagle Scout. I've backpacked all over North America. I was used to be an Army intelligence officer. I've hunted big game in Africa, so I'm really comfortable in the woods. And I'm not bragging about that. I'm just saying that's I'm comfortable in the woods. You know, I don't have a problem with it at all. And we crossed over the creek, and I stepped into another field, another large meadow. And I told Kristen, I said, my goodness, there's another large meadow here north of the creek. You know, this is a great place to research. You know, we've never looked at this before. This is going to be great because it's as far as I know, it's virgin. Nobody's looked at it. And it'll, you know, double our area to actually research in. And she goes, what are you talking about? I said, no, Kristen, there's another big field over here. It's really cool. And she goes, don't move. I'll be right there. And so she came over to me. She crossed the creek, came over to where I was standing. She goes, Trey, you're right where we started. You're standing in the meadow. You've been here 50 or 60 times. And I'm like, no. This is new. You don't know what you're talking about. And she says, you need to calm down and just stop. You're in the meadow. We are standing where we started from. This is hard to articulate, and I'm going to do my best because language isn't sufficient in this particular situation, but it's almost like the environment changed. It's almost like this field that I was perceiving morphed back into the original meadow. And I was so disoriented and so confused, she called back to base camp and said, hey, you know, Trey's having a problem. He's really disoriented and confused. And they started getting concerned. Remember, we had a guy that had missing time several years earlier in that same area.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you know, do you need us to come get you? And I'm like, guys, just everybody leave me alone for about 10 minutes. Just leave me alone. Let me get regrounded. And thank God we have strict protocols and safety measures in place, i.e. nobody goes out alone, carry a GPS and compass with you. You have radio comms back to base camp. Because I seriously did not know where I was, wandered off and died, you know, in that remote area. So, you know, that's the extreme disorientation that I experienced personally. And, you know, I have Kristen was there. She witnessed this, and she can attest that, you know, it was very unnerving for everybody involved.
Do you think it was just the area that you were in at that moment, or something did it to you on purpose? Because that sounds insane.
That's an excellent question. That's an excellent question. We did have a radiation spike, like I said, above the baseline. It went up to 0.33 microsievert per hour when that happened. So once again, we had that spike of radiation. Three ways to look at it. It's a natural phenomenon, like the wind is a natural phenomenon that happens, or intelligent, sentient beings are harnessing that natural phenomenon, i.e., we harness the wind with windmills and sailboats and stuff like that. We're using a natural phenomenon to our own means. Or thirdly, it's an artificial phenomenon, like wind can be created with a turbine. So the answer to that question is, I don't know. Something is very unique about this location. And as long as I'm able to go out there and research it, and, you know, God gives me the, you know, the strength to do it, I'm going to be out there trying to figure out exactly what's going on.
Yeah, you sold me. I want to go out there already.
Well, we're actually going to be out there Friday. We're going back out there this weekend. So maybe we can have some new stories.
Yeah, that'd be
weekend.
Great to hear about.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
It sounds like. Well, now, Matt, I'm going to jump in front of you, and I'm going to say, Trey, it sounds like we might have to have you back on the show sooner than later to talk about this. Would that be okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Always happy to talk about it. But it is an amazing, amazing story. Like I said, you know, it's enough for a book, you know, which I put everything in, you know, in the book, a lot of the stuff I didn't talk about in there, and gathering up stuff for my second book. So, yeah, always happy to share these experiences. It's not my story. The only thing I'd ask is people keep the location secret, but the experiences belong to the world, because it would be very arrogant and selfish of me to keep this from people, because it's the world's story, and the experience belongs to the world.
Okay, got a quick question for you, then Matt Delph is up next with his comments or question. What is the name of your book so that if I go to Amazon, I could buy it?
It is called The Meadow Project, Explorations into the South Skinwalker Ranch. You can type that into the search bar, or you can just put my name, Trey Hudson. Either you'll get a picture of a wino or my book, one or the other. No, I'm kidding. It'll bring up my book.
Awesome. Okay, Matt Delph, you are next. You are up on deck.
I really don't have, like I said, a question or anything, but just tell Trey I'm looking forward to researching this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely going to be a good time.
When Matt
no
Delph
questions.
Says
looking
things like
to it.
That, Trey, you know he's serious. He's a great Matt is a 10 out of 10 on my scale, and I know he's excited about it. So Kyler, do you have any other questions for our guest?
I was actually just now looking at his book right there. I just pulled it up. That looks really cool. So I'm gonna have to listen to that tomorrow.
All right, you better buy it and then mail it to him, and Trey, if he sends you the book, would you autograph it?
Yeah, somebody will help you with the big words, yeah.
Okay, great. I was trying to sell you another book. I know about being an author, so we got to try to sell each other's book. What can I say? So I'll tell you what, you have been an absolutely wonderful guest. Thank you, first of all, Matt Delph, because you're a friend of Matt's. And Matt, mm-hmm. thank you so much for getting Trey on here. You told me about him several times, but lo and behold, here he is. And he has been a King Kong guest. And we really appreciate it. And we would love to have you back sooner than later. I got to give you I normally do like a quick call around of all of our folks, our co-hosts and our guests. And so we'll chat with you for a minute. And I wanted to say thank you so much. Do you have any parting thoughts you would like to leave us with?
What I would like everybody keep in mind is the world is an amazing place, and it's much stranger than you realize. Keep your eyes open, keep your mind open, and go out there and create your own adventures.
That is correct. You're 100% correct, and thank you for that. In fact, that's kind of the subject of the new book. It's called Program the Brain. Program your brain, and I hope people will enjoy it. So, look, first of all, thank you so much, Trey, for being with us. We really appreciate it. We want to have you back sooner than later. Number two, thank you to our co-host, Matt Delf, a friend of mine for 7 years. And Matt, wouldn't trade you as a friend for the world. You've been a great guy who has really promoted and helped all the Bigfoot conferences that we've done and all the other stuff. So just thank you so much for bringing Trey to our show. We'll be on next week. Well, actually, you have to be. You have no choice. I'm the professor, and so you have no choice. We'll see you next week, okay?
Yes, definitely. Thank you.
All right, good. And Kyler Smith, of course, from Houston, Texas, and our newest member of our panel. He's also a dude that's on ScaryCast on Monday nights, and we love having you on here. And you will be back. This is the doctor talking, right?
Absolutely. I will be back.
Well, great. Well, look, thanks a lot. And just wanted to remind everybody, the Havelock Comic-Con is coming up November 19th. It's going to be the first Comic-Con in a town that has Cherry Point Marine Base with 23,000 Marines. We're going to provide a superior family-oriented event for them, and we're excited. So I want to say thank you again, Trey, for being with us, and we'll talk to everybody soon. This is Dr. John Stamey. Let me get that lovely British lady, because she always tells us goodbye. Where are you, British lady? There she is. We got her. And we'll say thanks a lot. We'll see everybody next week. Same bat time, same bat channel on ScaryCast Tuesday. What more can you say? Everybody say goodbye.